We're learning about the mission and rebirth of America's Black Holocaust Museum on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is a Milwaukee museum tracing the damage done by the Holocaust of slavery and the injustices to Black Americans, the Jim Crow era effects that carry over to today in the form of racially motivated police shootings, the education achievement gap between Black and white students, the growing wealth gap, to name a few. What would you like to know about the America's Black Holocaust Museum? Do you have remembrances of its founder, lynching survivor Dr. James Cameron? 800-642-1234. Dr. Bert Davis is president and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. Dr. Davis, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
Good morning. How does it feel for you to about to reopen your doors next month after the museum has been closed all these years?
It's a manifestation of a lot of emotions. Very excited, of course. And equally as excited, nervous, because we are being passed the baton from Dr. James Cameron, which provides us one of the most unique museums in not only Milwaukee, but the entire world. And so I'm nervous, but I'm excited. I'm hopeful because, as you illustrated in the introduction, and thank you for that wonderful introduction, this is a time that is most necessary for us to have a museum like America's Black Holocaust Museum reopen or reemerge, because we now find ourselves more racially polarized than we've been in decades or even generations. And for so many reasons, which I don't know if we could even cover in this hour or less than an hour that we're going to be together this morning, we need to come to grips with, and we need to have open and honest discussions about. And it's really aligning with Dr. Cameron and one of his many visions as it relates to the truth, because as many of our older relatives have probably told each and every one of us that's listening in the morning, the truth will set you free. And the truth is one of the hardest things for us to garner and find in this world today. So it's with great honor and pride that we reemerge this museum, because it's in the spirit and hopefully and truly in the image of Dr. Cameron, one of the nation's only known survivors of a public lynching, and then someone who became a self-taught historian, and then to write a book about his life's experience called A Time of Terror, and then ultimately open a museum, which is one of the only museums of its type and its kind with its mission in the entire world.
We're going to dig deeper into Dr. Cameron's life and legacy in just a moment, but give us a picture in our mind's eye, if you will. Take us into the museum. When we walk in, what might we see? What is around us?
So the first thing, as I will set the kind of groundwork, is that the museum is located in Bronzeville. And Bronzeville itself is making a reemergence or an emergence. I'm not certain if you're aware that this time last week, last Monday, the New York Times came out with their 52 places in the world that people should pay attention to in 2022, because we are going to be places of change. And Bronzeville, the community Bronzeville, was named in slot number 49, not, of course, in any order of priority, as one of the 52 places to visit and to recognize as a place of change. So historically speaking, for the museum, to be in Bronzeville is really, really important. And I'll just give you a little bit of a segue into why it is, and that is when Dr. Cameron wanted to place the museum in Bronzeville because of the significance of Bronzeville. Not only here in Milwaukee, Bronzeville is across the country in urban areas where these have been centers of excellence as relates to socioeconomic development, arts, and culture. They are the epicenters for up-and-coming middle class, upper middle class, even all classes of African Americans that want to contribute to the health, the safety, and the beauty of a shared community. So that with that being in the setting, we're in Bronzeville, which has just been internationally recognized. So when you set it in that context, then you go into this beautiful building that is an extension of what is the original Garfield School. So the entire block between North Avenue and Garfield and Onville Phillips has been redeveloped by Melissa Allen with the support of Alderwoman Coggs. And so that is significant itself because they took these old structures and rebranded them or renovated them. But then the most northern building is the Griot Building, and the first floor is occupies the Griot Building, and that's where the museum is. So you've got this beautiful new, brand new space. As you walk into the doors coming from the South Plaza, the first thing you'll see is a community open space. And this is really significant because this space will never be quote unquote curated with any artifacts. It will be open for the community. So just imagine that the museum itself has not physically reopened, but when the building was finished in 2018 to now, we've had well over 130 different events there in the community, because it belongs to the community. And so it will always belong to the community. So we've envisioned possibly having a cafe there. We will have some grab and go for gifts. And there will be a donor wall there, but it's just a open space where you can kind of set the tone for your visit. As you walk through, there will be a welcoming exhibit that will feature Dr. Cameron in some way. We're still working on the final details as to how we bring Dr. Cameron to life to say welcome. And then that one of the most significant parts of the museum, and this was really essential to Dr. Cameron, is that we don't want people, any people who come into the museum, but especially our young people, to believe that the existence of African Americans in this world was because of slavery, and that the cradle of civilization, all ethnicities, all races, and the distinction between ethnicities and races is also very important and highlighted in the museum, came from the continent of Africa, not the country of Africa, but the continent of Africa. So we talk about some significant events stemming from when man first, and woman, actually it was a woman who was first, the DNA was first chartered, walked the sub-Saharan Africa in the Nile Valley region to then significant things that happened in Europe, in Asia, in South America, North America. So we really give the context that history is not 400 years away, it's over 5,000 years of history. And so, and we have a shared history. And then you get into the complexities of the transatlantic slave trade and continue with that. But I'm thinking that there may be some time for me to take some questions now, or should I keep going with the tour?
This is a great tour. I just want to pause to reintroduce you. We have Dr. Burt Davis, who leads America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee, preparing to reopen with a new space after being closed for more than a dozen years. What would you like to know about the museum? What exhibits do you want it to feature? What stories should it tell about Black Wisconsinites and history? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Davis here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the new chapter for America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A recent $10 million anonymous gift through the Greater Milwaukee Foundation will help the museum hire staff, build exhibits that we've been talking about, prepare the space for a grand reopening next month. And this museum, it will ensure we don't forget. It shows the atrocities of slavery and connects it to the present day racial injustices that are all around us. What do you want to see and learn at this museum? What story of the Black experience is vital for the museum to tell? Have you visited the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C.? What was that like for you? 800-642-1234. Dr. Burt Davis, President and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum, with us for the hour. Dr. Davis, looking more closely at Dr. James Cameron, who founded the museum in 1984, how do you make sure you respect his vision, his mission? And does Dr. Cameron have personal artifacts he left behind that is part of the museum collection?
Well, thanks. Good morning again. So there are some very large shoes to fill as it relates to Dr. Cameron and his legacy. Attributing to his legacy and showing the respect that he deserves is going to be a monumental feat, but I believe that we are characterizing the reemergence and reopening of the museum in a way that he would be proud, in a way in which he realizes that we are going about this in a way that we have been very fortunate in our fundraising, but also very fortunate in our friend raising, and very fortunate in our building this momentum in the community so that we can continue his legacy. Now, it's important to recognize the fact that one of the major reasons that the museum is coming back is because of Dr. Cameron. None of us that are working on this project or who have been working on this project since the museum closed in 2008 can really take the lion's share of the credit for why people want to see the museum come back. We've done two separate analyses based on strategic planning with a private organization and a university here, Nimble Strategies out of Missouri and UWM Milwaukee. And the number one reasons why people that were questioned throughout Milwaukee and in the surrounding suburbs that they wanted to see the museum come back was because of Dr. Cameron. Hmm. Dr. Cameron was one of these people that even when the museum was officially closed, if you saw a light on and you knocked on the door, he'd let you in. and then you'd better be prepared for an education. So, you know, continuing that spirit and that legacy of being a beacon for education around these critical issues is really, really what we are hoping to attain. And I think that will be truly the way in which Dr. Cameron would want us to represent his thoughts and his efforts in wanting this museum to be in Bronzeville and to reopen. So I think that is what we are aspiring to. I know that's what he's expecting. And I think we've done an adequate job so far. Of course, the proof is in a proverbial pudding once we've opened our doors and what happens then. The other part of the question was Dr. Cameron's artifacts, which we are still uncovering. Our head griot, Reggie Jackson, told us about three and a half, four weeks ago that he's still finding papers and articles from Dr. Cameron in his basement and library. Hmm. There's a special archives of Dr. Cameron's writings and teachings and papers that's in the public library. We just had a great meeting with our dear friend, the public librarian, Joan, to talk about future programming between the museum and the Milwaukee Public Library. But here's the thing that is, in a way, kind of disturbing, but it's a challenge to have, and that is because Dr. Cameron was all things America's Black Holocaust Museum. When he passed in 2006, the museum eventually closed in 2008 because he wasn't there running the museum anymore. Hmm. And of course, we had the Great Recession, and several other major donors had passed away as well. And so there, we had to remove a fair amount of the artifacts in just a series of a few days. And so a lot of the artifacts that were in the museum that are still probably salvageable and usable or reusable are in storage facilities throughout the city and in people's garages or basements, because people out of the kindness of their hearts came and said, we'll hold on to this until we bring the museum back.
Wow.
So it's really a good kind of challenge to have, because all of the artifacts and all of the exhibits that we have in the museum currently right now are all brand new. Mm. And so they will be enhanced by technology as well. So this actually is a good challenge to have, because we then now can reintroduce these exhibits on a quarterly and a biannually or annually or seasonal pace as relates to theme and as relates to popularity.
Dr. Bert Davis with us, president and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum, and taking us through the museum and what to expect as it prepares to reopen in February. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Dr. Davis, for people who are unfamiliar with Dr. Cameron, can you give us a sense of what he went through as a teenager surviving a lynching in 1930 and what that trajectory and experience meant to his life?
Well, to be very, very candid and perfectly honest, I don't think anybody or anyone, not even his surviving children, could actually say or pinpoint exactly what it meant or how it felt. But no matter how many times I've read his story or have been told his story in various ways from various individuals, if you can imagine being a 16-year-old that was asked to go on a joyride and before you know it, you've been asked to commit a crime and that you don't want to commit, that you would not commit, that you've never committed. And before you know it, in the blink of an eye, you've got people trying to march you to a tree to hang you at the age of 16. If you just take that and view what your life would be like through that lens alone, you know what's got to be life altering. You know what's got to be life changing. And that's what it was. Dr. Cameron committed his life to this work because of his own life experiences. And very few of us can say that what we thought we would be is exactly what we're ending up being when it's all said and done, because we know that life has challenges and paths that are different for each and every one of us, depending upon the effort that we put into it, the struggles that we endure, and the life that we're provided with and the guidance during that life. So it was almost like he had to do what he has done because of what happened to him. Mm. Now, the reality of this is, and this is something that I want to continue to infuse into this conversation, and that is, this museum is not all doom and gloom. This museum does not finger point. This museum does not want to make any individual feel bad about the events that have occurred, because this museum has a culmination of an accumulation, ultimately a culmination of the history of African Americans in America, which is rich, which is varied, and in many cases has been successful. So we're not just going to be beating people over the brow about how badly people of color were treated in this country, in this world. This is a full spectrum of our history, our collective history, because this is just not Black history. As a matter of fact, the museum is collectively moving away from the notion that that February 1st should be the beginning of Black History Month. It should begin the beginning of Blacks in American History Month. Because we are an integral part and play an integral part and will always play an integral role in the history of the United States. And so as we're characterizing the best way to represent Dr. Cameron, you're gonna get quite frankly, colloquially, the good, the bad, and the ugly of America. But we don't want people to think that they're going to come there and be depressed. You're not. You may feel emotional, and many people do, me included, when I first started working here, and even still now to this very day. But it doesn't mean that there's still some pride that I take in how all Americans have survived the years that we now look back on as part of our American collective history.
Dr. Burt Davis with us leads the America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. He's been president and CEO since September of 2019, a board member of the Association of African American Museums. What would you like to know about running a museum? How would you like to see Milwaukee's Bronzeville neighborhood develop, emerge, reemerge? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking about America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee and what the future holds for it. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The museum is preparing to reopen its doors after more than a dozen years, thanks in part to a $10 million anonymous grant through the Greater Milwaukee Foundation that's breathing new life into the museum. The museum, as we've been talking about, was founded by Dr. James Cameron, founded in 84, who had survived a lynching as a teenager in 1930. What do you want to say about the atrocities of the Black Holocaust? How do you want this museum to tell your story? What should the next generation understand about racial injustices over hundreds of years? Join in 800-642-1234. Dr. Burt Davis, president and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum, with us for the hour. Dr. Davis, education being a really important component of this, I would imagine you'll have education groups coming through, school groups coming through a lot. We've seen Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin and other states pushing bills that would ban public schools from teaching students about systemic racism in the U.S., banning critical race theory. What challenges does the museum face in teaching this piece of America's past and present?
That's a really great question. So one of the things that I've been grappling with personally and professionally as relates to the back and forth of critical race theory is that as I've been listening to people on all sides talk about this, there's a preponderance of people who don't even understand and know what critical race theory is and or its application to the educational system, if appropriate at all. So let me give you some context first. And that is, as we all went to school and matriculated through school, whether it's private, public, parochial school, let me just give you a quick example. When you were in third grade, you weren't exposed to physics, were you?
No.
Or calculus?
No.
No. Because it would have been an inappropriate subject for you to try to grapple with as a third grader. You taught what was appropriate to the learning and building blocks for your continued learning and matriculation through school. You didn't learn these complex things. So first and foremost, when people are pounding their fists in the air saying, you're not gonna have our children doing this. And my contention is, well, first of all, critical race theory and its concept is not a subject matter. It is just that, it is a theory. So when I think about the educational programming in America's Black Holocaust Museum, I'm thinking of them as being two different things, because it's not like our programming is going to be called critical race theory. Our programming is going to be appropriate to whatever the exhibits are, contextually or chronologically, what the exhibits are portraying and talking about our history. The whole notion of critical race theory is that many of the things that we learn, many of the aspects of our collective lives here have been skewed by the onset of even the beginning of us using classifications like race. Race isn't something that we talked about in the beginning of time. It basically started, the whole notion of race started here in the United States after we occupied this sacred land. So I don't even think of the relationship between us doing educational programming on Martin Luther King, because of course this is Martin Luther King Day, through the prism of critical race under the auspices of it being called that. It's just, we're gonna talk about Dr. Martin Luther King, the truth behind the man and his efforts. And so I think once again, we get bogged down into the minutia of people taking us away from our collective destiny through the mechanisms that we could share this destiny. And that is, let's just teach the facts about our country, about the individuals in our country, about the fact that our ethnicities are not very different in ultimately what we want. We just culturally are different, but everybody wants what's best for their family, their community, their children. But our cultures are different in the way in which we get to the end point. And I think that's where we really need to have these discussions. And that's the vision of the museum. And that is having a safe space where we could have this programming, where we could have these discussions that are safe and respectful of everyone. And just to give you an example of some of the programming, we've had five book clubs, because now all of our programming, of course, is virtual.
Mm-hmm.
And the books that we've chosen have been all by African-American authors. And to be very honest with you, the majority of our audience that have participated in our book clubs at America's Black Holocaust Museum have been white, have skewed demographically white and over 50. That is saying that there is this need for us to share and be a part of this critical discussion, not talk about critical race theory, but be a part of the critical discussion as to where and why and how we got to where we are, but more importantly, how we're going to charter the course for where we need to go.
I'm going to reintroduce you here. We're talking with Dr. Burt Davis, who is president and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. You can join in. Have you been to the museum before it closed? Tell us about your experience. What would you like to know about the museum? Are you interested in learning more about the history of African Americans? Share your thoughts, your insights, your experience. 800-642-1234. Dr. Davis, you mentioned going virtual with these book clubs. How has COVID affected the museum's reopening plans?
Well, it has in several different ways. And once again, I would say that at first we thought that it was a challenging thing, but overall I think it's turning out to be a good thing. So unfortunately, during COVID, we were not able to reopen or reemerge the museum when we first wanted to. We first declared that we were going to open during the DNC, mm-hmm. when the DNC was here in Milwaukee, because that would have been like the premier time to showcase the museum and all of the great things about Milwaukee. And well, of course, that didn't happen. So we then said, all right, well, we'll take this into consideration that it's not meant for us to open now. And what it allowed us to do was to really focus on if, in fact, this is the way in which we're going to have this kind of what we call hybridized educational programming from now on, where there will be some percentage of all of our programming now, which will be virtual. We immediately started fundraising just for virtual programming. And we were very, very successful because of some of the wonderful institutions here who really just stepped forward immediately and said, hey, how can we help? And that was a lifesaver for us, because when you don't have it's clear that all roads lead to money, as one of my famous board members out of Chicago used to say. And if you don't have the funding for this programming, you could you can develop and create the best program in the world, but you aren't going to be able to do it without financial support. So we went to this hybridized and then fully virtual programming. And here's the thing that really we found across the country, a lot of my colleagues realized, and that is you didn't get anybody to come to your facility, but because it was virtual now, and because people were supporting our virtual programming through grants and through foundation gifts, we were able to raise money to produce this program. Now you're getting people from all over the country attending your program.
It's a much broader.
Now you're getting people from other countries attending your program. Whereas if we had a sleepover at the museum, it would just be people from the Milwaukee area.
Yes.
Right. So it's been a weird kind of a dichotomy in the fact that, yeah, we really want in-person programming. So now what we're preparing to do is we're setting the stage to have different school systems come through the museum. And my hope is, one of my dreams has always been, as an educator, as a museum person, as a veterinarian working in museums and zoos and aquariums for over 30 years, that we are able to touch people systemically, because I think systems always work. Because if we create a system that has a memorandum of understanding that says from now on, we will have fifth graders from all NPS schools and fifth graders from all Ozaukee County schools and fifth graders from all Waukesha County and Racine County schools come through the museum over some period of time, then that MOU is going to live beyond the you and I. It's mm-hmm. going to be something that's going to be set in stone. And so those are the things that we're thinking about and working on now, and that is creating these relationships through these various education districts so that we can make sure and ensure that our students come by and utilize the museum as best possible. And as we develop our educational programming, as we grow our staff, then, of course, the next step is to then do outreach, and that is to take the museum, the tenants of the museum, into these various schools.
Dr. Bert Davis leads America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. What are your memories of this museum in Milwaukee's Bronzeville neighborhood? What new memories do you want to make? How do you want to see the museum grow? What about the entrance and the welcoming space? What would you like to see there? What exhibits should it focus on? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Bert Davis here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Dr. Bert Davis this hour, president and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee since 2019. He also serves on the board of the Association of African American Museums in Washington, D.C. Still time to talk about African American life, history, and culture through work of museums like this one, 800-642-1234. Dr. Davis, with us for about 10 more minutes. You have such an interesting career trajectory, and I would love to know a little bit about how your experience as a veterinarian and with zoos and aquariums around the country and, you know, researching at the Smithsonian National Zoo, how does that experience inform what you do now running America's Black Holocaust Museum?
Well, I've been hit with that question so many times that I never really answered the same way, because I think that the collective of all my experiences has been one that has allowed me to know what it takes to really work in a nonprofit, museum-based organization, whether it's a botanical garden, zoo, or aquarium, or any other kind of museum, because I've kind of done almost everything from the entry level to the CEO level. And I think what that has done is it's given me a very broad and a very rich understanding of what it takes, and an understanding of how my employees and my staff how they feel about their jobs, how they perform their jobs, and I can relate to them because I can say, and I can look them in the eye in all honesty and say, I've done your job. I know what you're feeling. I know what you're doing. This is what you should be doing. And so I think that that is something that is really, really important because as we all know, when people tell their stories, and it's, and one of my favorite cliches is that life is just a culmination of a series of lots of stories, that the more you can understand where somebody has been, the better you can help them in creating a path for helping them to get where they want to be. And so for me, as a leader in this industry for these, for so many years, and have been in this industry for so many years, and have had all of these vast and various and diverse experiences, it's only helped me and in my career, but it's also helped me in other people's careers because I've been able to kind of advise and guide people through some of the things that they're going through that I went through 10, 15 years ago. I mean, I could say with all honesty, since September, if I think about just the last quarter of this year, I've had probably three or four people who I've worked with, who I've mentored, to call me and ask me about some very specific things that they were enduring. And quite frankly, they would say, what would you do if you were in my shoes? And so having that experience is always helpful, but more importantly now, at this point in my life and in my career, is not only having that experience, but sharing that experience with those that are coming behind me and being able to adequately and resourcefully pass the baton to the people that are going to be doing this kind of work in the future.
Let's bring on a call now. Bob is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Bob. What's on your mind?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll be as brief as I can. My grandfather passed as white, basically, for the second half of his life. His black wife died, and he decided that he would see if he could pass as white and move to all-white neighborhood. And to just make the story short, he did much better as a white guy. Does the museum cover any of this?
Bob, thank you for your call. Dr. Davis.
So, Bob, thank you. First and foremost, thank you for your honesty and for your call. We don't have any specific exhibits right now that talk about quote-unquote passing, but they're, one of the things that we have is a virtual museum that was created after the museum, after Dr. Cameron died and the museum closed. And I'm thinking that there are some references to at least one of the movies that talked about that. And I know that there is a lot of attention being paid to, I think there is either an Amazon, but I know there's something on cable now that's talking about passing. It is something that you won't see directly or specifically in any exhibits currently. But as we are reopening, we're going to be developing stories behind all the exhibits and creating content. And I'm sure that at some point there will be something around ethnic and race relationships and how we actually coexisted and were tolerated or tolerant of others through the years. But thank you for sharing your personal thoughts.
Yes, Bob, thank you. Wade now in Trempealeau. Hi, Wade, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for this show. And I just, as a white guy out here in a very rural part of Wisconsin, I wonder if you could help me understand I've never heard of Bronzeville before, and I want to know what that means or what I would find there if I came to Milwaukee to visit.
Great question, Wade. Yes.
Thanks, Wade, for your question. That is really a good question. So the word Bronzeville really just in bare bones talks about the fact that it's inhabitants, it's a community. It's a series or a collective of communities made up of people of color, the bronze color. I remember reading about this growing up in Chicago, which has a traditional Bronzeville, which is reemerging as well. And some of the first words that talked about what this community would be called was one of the words that I always found fascinating called sepia, S-E-P-I-A, which is a different tone of brown. So Bare Bones is just a collective of communities that are made up of people of color, primarily Black people. Now, the significance of Bronzeville is that Bronzeville served as an epicenter for economic development, social and cultural awareness. And so as in all other communities, ethnic communities, racial communities, where there's a financial base, there's an educational base, there's a faith base, all of these bases are in the community. One of the first things that happens is that there's economic development because you're circulating money within that community. So that community becomes important, that community becomes self-sustainable, and that community strives. And so the important thing about it being characterized as Bronzeville is that all things bronze happen there. But the interesting thing, and one of our exhibits will illustrate here, is that Bronzeville during the day and even at night was not comprised just of people of color. Here, just like in Chicago and other Bronzevilles across the country, if you wanted to come to shop during the day or see cultural events during the day or artistic events, parties, concerts at night, people of all colors came to Bronzeville because that's where the entertainment hubs were. And so it was this community of success. And everybody, virtually everybody, was able to contribute and benefit from the ultimate success of this community. It's nothing unlike any other communities that other ethnic groups have had for centuries here. The difference is our Bronzevilles have been decimated either by urban renewal, gerrymandering, building a highway that goes right through it, you name it, it has occurred across the country in Bronzeville.
Well, Dr. Burt Davis, thank you so much for being here and sharing the museum with us. We appreciate it.
It's indeed my pleasure. And we are looking forward to reopening on February 25th. So please mark your calendars. And you can go to America's Black Holocaust Museum.org or abhm.org to learn more about the virtual museum and our upcoming events. And thank you for this opportunity to share my thoughts and our thoughts about this museum and share the legacy of Dr. James Cameron, our dear founder.
Dr. Burt Davis, President and CEO of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. We also have a link to the museum. You can find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.